If you will please put your full name in your Zoom square, it would be great. We'd like to know who we're talking to. I see a Motorola phone, a Moto G Power 5G 2024. We need your name. And anyone who's just using initials, please put name. We got a Sumi and some others. And if we don't, whoever Ron and Ryan's are, please provide us your last name. We like it for the record, and we like to know who is listening in so we can talk further if they contact us. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Mitchell.
We are on the record.
Thank you, Clerk Castle. Welcome, everyone, to this Park County Board of County Commissioners meeting on Wednesday, the 11th of February. If you're so inclined, please join us for an invocation and the pledge.
Lord, I want to give you thanks for this great nation and this great country and the county that we live in.
I want to ask you that you be with us in our decision making. And in our decisions that we that are involved in us today, we ask you that you be with all those citizens of Park County that are in your need. We ask all this in your name. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. We are blessed with this spring-like winter weather, and we appreciate it, but I think from if we look up on the Continental Divide, we might get real winter yet in this month of February, so we can probably count on that. So I want to welcome you all. We have in front of us, we have Commissioner Gimmer, we have Commissioner Mitchell, Commissioner Dave Whistle, Lucas Meyer, Nate Osterberg, our paralegal. We have our Clerk Castle on the end. We have proposed in front of you, ladies and gentlemen, an agenda. Are there any amendments or corrections we need to make?
Mr. Chair, I move we accept the agenda as written.
I'll second that, and we also have counsel online.
Oh, I have John Evans online, too. Thank you. Proper motion and second. Any further discussion? Call the question. Those in favor vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. That motion carries. The agenda is adopted as presented. First item on our agenda is the consent items, which is the approval of vouchers and approval of minutes.
I move we approve the consent items.
I'll second that.
Proper motion and second. Basically what this is the minutes from the prior meeting and then our vouchers. Just for full transparency, we have been limiting our spending in January for a variety of reasons. One of them is, you know, that goes into, goes out of stuff of government. If you don't have the goes into, it can't go out. So we have been holding back. So month of January was limited spending. We're making up for it in February. So we're doing a total of all funds of $805,000 this particular week. So that's a little bit different, but we are in a better place. So that's why. Any further discussion? Call the question. Those in favor of what we're saying, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. That motion carries 320. Okay, next up is consideration and or decision on the following items. Number one, approve or deny a resolution for the land use case A25-0045, Township 9, Range 77, Section 29, Southeast Quarter, part of the south half of the east quarter lying southwesterly of Highway 9 and the northeasterly of South Platte River and part of the northeast quarter, the northeast quarter, of the southeast quarter, of the southwest quarter, lying southwesterly of Highway 9, Section 29, Township 9, South Range 77, less portion known as Track B for the Platte at reception 658879, part of the northeast quarter lying north of the South Platte River, Section 32, Township 9, South Range 77, part of the west half of the north West Quarter, lying northerly of the South Platte River and southerly of Highway 9, Section 33977. This is a land use case, I believe, on a minor subdivision that's out west of town here that we heard earlier. This is the formal consideration of that action.
I move that we approve the resolution for land use case A25-0045, known as parcel, well, they don't have it, but I'm not going to list all that tract of step.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
It was a little lengthy, but it's a meets and bounds description. So right. For the record, it made sense. So what we have is the proposed resolution. If we were to adopt this, Madam Clerk, what would that resolution be?
It is 26006.
Thank you for that.
And to add to the resolution, it is known as address 49001 Highway 9, Fair Play. That's what I was looking for.
Thank you very much for that addition to that. So we have it on the table in front of us. Any further discussion or questions? If not, we'll call the question. Those in favor of adopting the resolution 2026-006, vote by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. That motion carries 3-0. Okay. Next up, we have number 2, approve or deny professional services agreement for Ron Sladek of Tatanka Historical Associates. This is an item we heard last week, which is our normal practice to give some time for people to ask questions or comments. And this is for work related to an existing contractor for, I believe this is the National Heritage Area.
To update the historic preservation plan.
That's it.
From years 2026 to 2030.
So we have had this historic reconnaissance effort going on with our historical people last couple of years, I think it is. And so this is an update. I think they're on a 5-year window. So what the update is to take it on up into the next group of time. And that's what this is to do. And any other questions or concerns? I have none.
No, I went through this agreement. I didn't have any questions or concerns with this agreement.
I move that we approve professional services agreement for Ron Sladek of Tatanka Historical Associates for the update to historical preservation plan that will cover the years 2026 to 2030.
I'll second it.
Proper motion and second. Any further discussion? Being none, we'll call the question. Those in favor vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion carries 3-0. Number 3 up on our agenda is approve or deny Public Works recommended bids for on-call services for the following. Culvert replacement services project PW 2026-004. Engineering services project number PW 2026-005. We have greater plow heavy equipment project PW 2026-006. Materials testing project Public Works 2026-02. Survey project Public Works 2026-01. And trucking project Public Works 2026-003. We have traditionally had these particular contractors or others for specific services that Public Works can utilize throughout the year on a retainer or a contract, so that in the event that we need their services, they're already under basically paper with us, if you will, under an agreement, so that this can be done. Generally speaking, these are going to be in an emergency situation, a flood, a blizzard, something catastrophic, a bridge failed, something along those lines. So those are that we've had standard practice the last 3 years that I can recall.
I move that we approve the Public Works recommendation bids for on-call services for all of the following and listed by Commissioner Whistle, PW 2026-004-005-006-02-01-003.
Proper second it.
Proper second. Any further discussion?
Yes.
Comments, Jared? Commissioner Mitchell?
Just the comment for me is that this is also services that may be in conjunction with a new grant that we're getting, or things that are already built into the budget of work that is planned for this year. And so Public Works doesn't have to wait on us to review the contracts in 1 week and then pass it the next week or the week after. They can get to work when Mother Nature allows us, which she does right now, but it's all depending on water for that one. So that's my comment. Thanks.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, we'll call the question. Those in favor, vote by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. That motion carries 3-0. Okay. Item 4. Approve or deny recommended requirements and authorize signers for the CSU Extension bank account with TBK Bank, quote, County of Park, unquote, Park County Extension account ID public fund free bus. Anyhow, what this is a proposal for amounts for signatories up and above or below a number. Cindy Garst.
So I think the reference number was taken literally from the bank statement. I think it meant free business. So anyway, the number is what's important. So this is the account that is related to our 4-H activities. It is an account under the county's tax ID number, and it is administered through the CSU program. Last year, we did update the signers when Barbie Garnett moved to another position. Lucas was new. So we updated signers then, but we've since had more staff changes and some assigned CSU personnel now, Abby and Elena. And so this is being brought before you so that we can update the authorized signers, as well as what I realized and wanted to make sure we did is that we put a restriction so that it's going to take two signers for anything over $500. One signer can sign a check for under $500. Right now, I'm the signer because some other things hadn't been updated, and so I sign all of them, but I think we've talked about having just that restriction for two signers. So that's what's being brought before you today. And then, so if you have any questions, let me know. But that's why we're here today, is just to update the signers at the bank, and that the bank knows what the restriction is when checks come through to clear.
Thank you for that clarification, because it basically is an existing account. It's a longstanding account. It's been used in the process of 4-H, the fair activities,
yes,
in specific to that. And so it's just making the current staff and elected and appointed officials on the signatory card.
Yes, and I believe, I don't have the agenda in front of me, but my recollection is that we were recommending April Chabot, Kurt Jones, and Abby, I believe.
You are correct.
Yes.
Okay, any other questions?
No, I move we approve the recommended requirements and authorize signers for the CSU Extension bank account with TBK Bank under account 9101. I mean 9101, yeah.
I'll second it.
Proper motion and second. Any further discussion or questions? Being none, we'll call the question. Those in favor vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. That motion carries 3-0. Thank you, ma'am.
And I just wanted to point out that even though the account is administered through the CSU people, a staff, we receive the bank statements here. We have processes to monitor what they're doing and look at the processes. So I just wanted to point that out, too.
And all those processes follow under our current procedures, policies?
Well, like all of the policies we're looking at now, we're looking at our internal controls at all times, right, and trying to improve them. But we do have processes in place that are the standard items that you can expect, where the person writing the check is somebody who's different than reconciling the bank statement. And then, of course, we have copies, like I said, of things up here as well, and might go audit at any time as well. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it. Okay. Next up. Introduction and first reading of a proposed revised and restated regulations to Ordinance 20-03, Regulation to Short-Term Rentals in Park County. So as a public hearing, I'm going to set a few ground rules as chair for us to follow in the first reading of this ordinance. And this is something that will be a continuum of time. Ask Brandon Heacock to come join us, our Development Services Director, to give us a little feedback on that. We have some folks in the room. I presume we have several folks online, just a couple. And so with that, we're going to go ahead and start off with a little edification and preamble by Mr. Heacock. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Commissioners. Brandon Heacock, Development Services. So, yeah, this is the first read of the ordinance. This isn't the first time you guys have seen this. Let me pass out some deliverables for you first.
And, Brandon, while you're doing that, do you need to be co-host?
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
But let's wait until we get to that point, I think.
Okay.
I gave you permission.
Perfect.
Thank you.
So what I passed out to you guys are essentially a high-level review from legal. There's some great things in there that I think we may have missed. So I don't know if you want to dig into that first or if you want to comment on anything that you guys saw within the ordinance itself. After all the conversations we have, we believe that everything that has been said by the public as well as the board has been included. So I definitely want to make sure that we have that right. But if you guys don't have anything specific to the ordinance, we can certainly move to the legal side of things. I did want to make some comments regarding some of those suggestions.
I suggest at this point we just take a minute and give the board an opportunity to gather thoughts and see if they have anything they want to respond to you or with the ordinance in general.
Sure.
And then we'll take just a pause for the cause.
Okay. Sounds good.
Board appropriately ready to go forward?
Okay. So are there any comments that you can think of regarding the ordinance itself, the format? I believe we've got all the grammatical errors. We've removed the tables, as we discussed last time. That is going to be a separate piece, which we will talk about, as well as the fee schedule will be a separate resolution as well.
If I may, I know that this came up a couple times, and it looks like the remedy is good on Section 6. This is page 2. Section 6, B, 3A, where anyone who's held a license for at least 2 full license consecutive cycles, parentheses, 24 consecutive months, and just put the end stop after that, 24 consecutive months, because then anyone who has been in good standing as a responsible owner, haven't had complaints, and have stayed in compliance owning a license does then qualify. So thank you. That's a good fix. And I think everything else was just minor cleanup and a couple references.
Correct.
So I think from what I'm seeing, I will, after receiving public comment for the next go-arounds, I will reserve the right to change my mind on anything. How's that?
Of course. Absolutely.
I'm seeing nothing. I think the asks and renditions were all added that I can recall from my notes.
Okay.
I would concur with that I think the suggestions that we've made were incorporated into the body of the current draft. So we are where we are.
Okay. Perfect. That's music to Georgia's ears. She's worked the hardest on this. So definitely appreciate her efforts, getting everything organized, working with all the other teams that this had nexus to. So I guess we can move to the the legal elements or the legal analysis. And again, this is a very high level. This isn't, you know, super in-depth, but I do think that if you'll call attention to the document that has written at the top limits, provision name insurance requirements, this is something that we think probably should be in there, and that is and that's mainly because there's some liability there. And, you know, I think a lot of us were just thinking that most people who own SDRs may be under a mortgage and the bank requires them to have the insurance in place to cover, you know, the risk to the bank. But we didn't think about people who may have paid cash for that asset and, you know, they don't necessarily fall under those requirements under general liability insurance. So you'll see that Summit County does require a minimum of $1 million liability insurance, specifically covering short-term rental use. So I would love your feedback on whether you guys believe that that insurance requirement should be inserted into the ordinance, because right now it is not.
So if I may, just to jump in here. So the first handout, the ordinance, was basically where we are, the end language, and these are then legal or other technical suggestions to include or exclude, whatever the case may be.
Correct.
Very good. Thank you.
Quick question on that as to what was pertaining here as far as when council went through this. States that some of the impacts is without insurance requirements, the county may face increased liability risks if accidents occur in uninsured properties. Got a question to that purview. How would we be liable?
Well, I think the general idea is that, you know, if someone is severely injured on that, there could be nexus to saying, well, it's the county that allowed the license to be issued. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know that world. But, you know, in terms of risk analysis, I'm bringing it to your attention.
I think that's a proper that's where my mind was going on that. I just wanted to clarify that.
Sure.
And that was – I'm going to keep reading, so I might come up with some more.
Yeah, and is the thought process kind of that that because we issued the license, we say everything is good, even though it ultimately is the responsibility of the property owner and the management company, if those are two different things.
Correct.
But it's just to protect ourselves from that perception.
It's similar to how some, you know, structures that were, you know, are deemed that we have to do a safety inspection. It's sort of in that same vein, that if somebody gets hurt and we didn't do a safety inspection, but it is required under our ordinance, then, you know, there could be some potential liability, I think is kind of the way they're thinking.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Georgia brought up a good point. You know, all of our contractors who are engaged with the building permitting process, they're required to carry certificates of liability. You know, we have them name us as the named insured as well. I don't think that's asking that here from legal to have us named per se.
But that was going to be my question. Is it though?
That would be a question for legal. But that's why I'm just introducing this, because this is first read. I think it's important to bring this in and say, you know, hey, there might be some liability and some implications to the county that we should think about, or that the board should think about. Any other questions regarding the insurance requirements?
May we ask Mr. Evans real quick on that legal, as far as when it comes to the impacts to the county and how that pertains to us being potentially liable, as well as if it's required, are we going to request or should we request our name to be on that liability insurance?
Mr. Evans, you're really faint. If you could maybe get closer to your microphone.
How's that better?
No.
Very strange.
All right, I'm going to ask you to unmute.
All right, how's that? I'm unmuted.
Yeah, you're unmuted, but it's very faint. I think our volume has turned up pretty high here because my microphone's...
Lucas was
very loud.
It up.
It's all the way.
I'm up as, for some reason, I'm up as loud as I can get.
Not working.
Okay, we'll be quiet and listen carefully.
John? John Evans?
Hold on.
I don't see him, that's what I'm saying.
I think he's going to reboot in, I think.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what.
We'll come back to that.
We'll come back. We'll move on with your recommendations and your suggestions, because it is a little loud.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick note on the second item that says density limitations and neighborhood caps. I'm not sure why I'm getting all this feedback.
Sound pretty loud.
Is your laptop mic off?
It is off.
Okay. It's just the feedback because we're turned all the way up on the microphones.
Yeah. As long as you can hear me, I can stay away from the mic.
We don't need any feedback on top of the rest of our gremlins.
So, yeah, I just wanted to make a quick mention regarding the limitations on density. We're going to get into the actual nuts and bolts of how we arrived at the limitations. So I think what this section is kind of pertaining to is just saying, you know, Breckenridge does limit, you know, 15 to 38% of units in specific zones. We have developed a different, formula since it's math-based. So we'll get into that. So I don't think there's anything really that we need to make mention to, but I do think it's important to have that conversation. So under point three, accessibility requirements. This is one of those things like insurance that we didn't really address, and I think it's often overlooked. I think it's one of those things that is greatly important. And essentially, just to summarize it, you know, it would under the ordinance it would say, you know, hey, if you have special considerations that have accessibility within your unit, then you should put that on your listing. And it's sort of, you know, us saying, hey, if you've got it, you know, it's a great thing, right? Because if you imagine somebody with a wheelchair and they need that accessibility, they have a family and they want to come out and enjoy the mountains, there's probably not a lot of STRs that have that, or if they do, they're not letting, you know, people know. So it's just one of those things that I think that because we missed it, it is a great addition, I think, to the ordinance.
Not something that we're going to require them to have accessibility, but have them request them to be able to announce that on their STR. Is that what you're stating?
Yeah, I don't think it's saying, well, hey, you have to have ramps, you know, and that kind of stuff. No, I'm just saying if they have it, we're not necessarily requiring it, but it's certainly encouraging it. That accessibility does exist in Park County.
Thank you.
Right. Well, market-based, it's going to be limited to people who need it.
Of course.
It will be the primary factor.
Yep.
And so if it's already in existence and then it gets converted to an STR, that's an ability that very few other vendors might have.
Sure. Absolutely. And then just moving on, this was marked as a critically high consideration under the emergency management plan. It is, again, something that may have gotten overlooked, or I do believe we have some considerations to it regarding, you know, access to certain properties and those kinds of things we do, you know, have under certain bullet points, but nothing as far as like an emergency management plan that, you know, would be broad-stroked and say, hey, you know, if you have... I guess we could just use Harris Park, for example. You know, there's one road in, two roads, basically, in and out of there. And so, you know, maybe having some kind of emergency management plan within that jurisdiction might be just an idea. But, again, it's just one of these things I think are important considerations to think about.
I think if that consideration, and sorry if I'm interrupting again.
No, you're fine.
If that consideration is thought about, the issue I can see coming about with that is to how detailed are we going to require that emergency action plan?
Yep. And it gives some, you know, the recommendations. Estes Park requires detailed wildfire evacuation plans for SDRs. Lake Tahoe, I know it's, you know.
There's a lot of different aspects and individual.
Sure.
Each individual location has that, and how do we embody that?
Yeah, exactly.
Even attempt to govern that. So that's just the question I have.
And then I think the last item was we've already pretty much considered this, and this is the detailed inspection criteria. We only have it specific to structures older than, is it 2006, Georgia? Yeah. And so we feel like we've done a pretty good job, but maybe something to run over and compare and contrast and see what we have existing versus what the legal recommendations are regarding, in a detailed inspection checklist. And it's mainly just saying it should be directly into the ordinance rather than just a process that's outside of, you know, the actual ordinance itself under our process and procedures at the staff level.
Well, and if I may comment, maybe it's just refer to this list and confirm that you are in compliance with the list, and have it be that the business owner is saying, yes, we are in compliance, and then it's on them.
Yep.
I think that's a good way to handle it.
Yep. And then I think the last item, data reporting requirements. I'm not sure where we're at on that. I know that when it comes to sales tax licenses, that is something that we require up front. I do know that, you know, in the event within the new ordinance, if there's ever an issue, with sales tax reporting, that kind of thing, it is written in there that can be inspected upon request. But it's one of those things where a lot of STRs are running through a wholesaler, so Airbnb, VRBO, and then they're the ones that are taking care of the tax on behalf of that STR owner. And so it's one of those things where I think we're so far into this that maybe we just, see if there's anything that we don't already have covered within our own processes. If we get too deep into this, we're just, the list keeps growing and growing for the applicant. And that's a tough thing to try to bridge and say, how can we make the process easy, efficient, and then, reward the responsible owners by having a three-year license, that kind of thing. And so we just maybe need to think about that, how that might fit into the current ordinance. And it may not be this particular ordinance, it may be further down the road, but however you guys want to handle that, I think those are all great things to consider from the legal perspective. With that, do you guys have any initial thoughts that I could write down as far as notes? We can certainly, process-wise, I can get individual feedback from you all on these topics.
The one that really pops to my mind is still the legal aspect of as far as requiring insurance and what that insurance entails as far as liability, and then also who is named on.
Sure.
Insurance, if it's even necessary for us to be involved in the naming on that or not.
Sure. Maybe if John is, Mr. Evans, if he is available, maybe he could answer that for us.
Or we can at least write the question down and ask for an answer.
Either way.
Yeah. And the reason I bring it up that way is because in my mind, it's up to the owner and operator of that facility to provide the insurance that is required of them. And I want to understand why and how we as a county would be liable if we did not require that.
Sure.
And let me make this comment just on a general basis. I'm a native Coloradoan, and I'm disappointed in the direction of governance in the state towards a more progressive, established way of doing business. One of my biggest concerns is the level of regulation that each government applies on the different layers. And by the time you get to local government, there's not layers, there are seams of government. So when we try to make this work,
One of my main concerns is an over-regulation or a burdensome regulatory structure for the owner-operator. None of us were included in a decision to open up short-term rentals to any zone, any place, anywhere in Park County in the original ordinance. Kind of the toothpaste got out of the tube, in my opinion. But here we are. We're with it. And I know we have people in the audience and other folks that want to speak to you, and we want your input. But basically, we're trying to make this work. And so we've gone through different iterations, which our staff has borne the brunt of that, the changing of the wording. We're to a point, I think, right now. I appreciate the concerns, and those will be taken into consideration. And some are valid. I'll just address the insurance one. My profession is an appraiser. I carry liability insurance, not for my future work, but for the work I did before. So when the lawyer comes knocking on my door and wants to put you on the other one side or the other of the V, I have some protection for that. This is no different. I don't know that we should require additional or a minimum or anything, but it would be a really good idea from a business perspective that you took care of that on the front end. So that I struggle with requiring that if it's a not common sense decision.
That's my opinion as well, is the common sense side of requiring it has to be there in my mind legally for us if we're going to go that route. I don't think that it's necessary to require something if legal doesn't see it being a harm or damage to the county in any way, shape, or form. This is somewhat similar, as you discussed earlier, based off of people that are looking to conduct business, such as construct buildings and that kind of stuff within the county, which we do require general liability. But on the same note, this is the contract is between them and the person that is renting the facility for that short time.
Yep, understood.
It's unmuted.
Is John unmuted?
Yes, Mr. Evans is unmuted.
Yes, I am unmuted.
He's still weak.
Okay, hear me okay. Can you hear me?
Nate, you want to call him and let him talk through the microphone on your phone?
Let's use older technology like a cell phone.
Sure, yeah. Old, newish technology.
And this has been the day of gremlins. I remember that's all it is.
Yeah, the gremlins have been visiting us today, so just to let you know.
Okay, we're going to get him on the phone here in a minute.
Well, and I just comment on insurance. I mean, it's running a business, so it's that with that thought process should be used.
Yeah, and if you have a mortgage, you're going to be under a requirement to insure it for hazard and to protect the insurance company.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you, Commissioner Mitchell. I don't disagree that you're running a business. You really should be insured. That's to the protection of yourself, but that's also, you know,
personal decision.
I think we're getting close to connectivity here.
Curiosity, should we see if Megan out there can discuss real quick to see if she's really muted as well? Ask her to unmute. Megan, our office assistant? Not necessarily. We can go with John. Yeah.
John Evans, our legal counsel. Welcome, John.
All right, go ahead, Pat. If you're looking for... We reviewed what we had in terms of the original proposal. If you're asking whether insurance provisions make sense, they do. The standard inclusion in most rental require owners to maintain liability insurance, specifically covering rental activities. Without insurance, the county could face increasing liability risks if accidents occur in uninsured properties. Business impact if uninsured property owners face catastrophic financial risk if their guests are injured. And then regulation concerns are of mine would be failure to require insurance creates a regulatory gap protecting both owners and guests. I certainly would agree that a minimum liability of $1 million should cover that. And requiring proof of insurance during the application process and renewal process would make sense. And specify that insurance must specifically cover short-term rental activities. As a standard, policies are often exclude this. And then require notification to the county if the insurance lapses or is canceled. Some counties have a provision similar to this, and so does the city and county of Denver. The risks to it are if guests are injured without adequate insurance, as I said before, it could lead to litigation against both the property owner and potentially the county. And property damage from renters may leave owners with no recourse if property insurance isn't maintained. And finally, I would say uninsured properties create a potential public safety hazard if the owners cannot afford repairs after damage. So those are essentially how I would look at this insurance inclusion.
Thank you. I think I caught the gist of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something for consideration, for sure, based on that explanation. Do we have any other questions at this time that are legal in nature? I don't at this point. What else would you like to share with us?
So the other document that's titled Park County Short-Term Rental Ordinance Executive Summary, that is essentially kind of a restatement on some of these that we've already gone over. And we believe that most of the other anything is already included into the ordinance. But I wanted to include it since it did come from legal. So I don't know that we need to necessarily discuss any of those. It doesn't look like, you know, they restate the insurance requirements. You know, they have SCR operators to respond to complaints within 1 hour, which is already included in our ordinance. And so I don't think we need to waste any time discussing this, but you guys can certainly consume it if you want after the fact. And then when we touch base individually, I would welcome any feedback that you have on that particular document. If you want to shift to the means and methods, I think that's kind of, we've had some feedback already based on the announcement that we were going to discuss this today. And so I'm hoping that I can run through how we arrived at limitations from a pure mathematical standpoint. I hope I can explain it really well. So, you know, any kind of questions will be, you know, limited. So let me share my screen here, Amy.
Actually, Brandon, I think that'd be helpful to show the weighting and the approach, which I think will unlock some people's curiosity.
Yep. All right. All right. So what you see before you, commissioners, is the same spreadsheet that you have seen throughout this entire process. And so basically, I'll just kind of run through exactly the components in which how we arrived at column R there, which is total allowable STRs. So there are three categories in which the math formula is based off of. So this median range here, that is basically the average of the minimum and the maximum all throughout. And this is obviously the one, this is the spreadsheet specifically to subdivisions that have 50 or more lots. And then, so that gives us the median range.
So can I question you, yep, just real quick for the audience's clarification?
Sure.
You're talking minimum, maximum, and medium range. Those are based off of acreage in those,
yes,
areas.
Thank you for that clarification. It is on purely based on acre, yes.
Let me stop you just a second, Brandon, just to set the table for this.
Sure.
So as the board went through this in combination with our staff, and this will become hopefully more clear over this meeting and many more to come, is that we were trying to establish a set of criteria that made sense and then yet was enforceable and manageable. So we looked at some varying components of what were our criteria going to be. So we came up with, I think there's 88 subdivisions here that have 50 lots or greater. And so we tried to look at that as its own set of data, and within that, the subset of these other criteria, which Brandon's beginning to get into. So this spreadsheet has a madness to its method, but if you look at it like this, you will never figure it out. So from that point, knowing that this is the beginning of the recipe, we're then going to cook the cake. Now you can go.
Yes, thank you. And so, yeah, there are other components, which I don't know why my spreadsheet keeps forwarding over to the right, but you can see that there is a calculation on all lots. So we'll just take Woodside, for instance. 257 lots in that particular subdivision. And then we basically segmented improved versus unimproved. And we did that based on, well, you know, we should really be focusing more on improved, right? Because if we go with the total and they're not improved, then that's going to take those weighted averages and skew the statistics. So everything is basically, as I run through here, will be on the improved. So that has been some point of confusion as well.
Which is, I believe, is where that green calculation shows density.
Yes, so you can see based on the formula here, I'll click on one of them. So it's this figure divided by this figure, which gives the percentage.
Several of those.
Yeah.
We'll have time for comments here in just a minute, but. We can absolutely have that discussion.
Okay. We need you at the microphone, but in lieu of that, the question from the audience was, okay, you're looking at this and it all makes sense to you. What does it mean to us? Is that a fair question?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're going to say we need more or less SDRs,
okay,
what are you trying to solve?
The parameter that we came up with was no less than 0.75 acres for an SDR, or at least 0.75 acres for an STR. It is my opinion as an individual.
I will say, sir, we do have time for that, but in order, this is a public hearing, since it's a first reading, we do have to stay on process. So we can come back to that absolutely when it's that time, but we can't at this point.
So in order of, we want you to come up when we have time to come to the microphone so we can capture that. So I'm going to give back the floor to Brandon to finish how we did the recipe.
Sure. So then the other, so that basically takes up the two first components. So we have a average acre size, and then we're going to have density, and then we're going to have this percentage of subdivision owners in county. So we had our GIS go, and you'll see two different columns here. Owners in county improved, owners in county unimproved, and total owners in county. And so that is essentially, this calculation is the total owners in county divided by the total improved lots. Right? Yes. Total owners in county divided by all lots. We may have to look at that, because I think that should be improved. So, we may have to – I thought I'd check this really well, but that may be – let me just change that and see how that works. So that did change it by 5% based on improved.
That's part of this process, is to look for the gremlins.
So, yeah, we're going to we'll have to look and see why that's so skewed, because we've got some that are 200 and, you know, 125%, 869%.
I think that's going to work.
Yeah, that's Yeah. Well, I guess for the purpose of the calculation, that was the third component in which is going to develop this subdivision index. So we can certainly work on why we have that messed up for this particular presentation. But that is part of this process, is, you know, getting this on the table and being transparent and finding out what makes sense and what doesn't. So moving on to the spreadsheet here. So you'll see the calculation there in the formula bar. So this was a deliverable that the commissioners were tasked to determine. And this was, you'll see the 20% on acre size. So these are weighted averages. And then 30% would be give it weight to density. And then 50% was weighted based on the percentage of subdivision owners. Did that not print?
No. Can you reprint?
I'm getting you guys all printed copies of this.
I printed it up there. 11 by 17.
Amy, you want to jump in?
Yeah. And if I may, I just want to let you guys know that this might look really crazy, but in all of the input we've received over since this the original ordinance was drafted passed a couple years ago, we've heard that we don't want to – that people are running a business within a neighborhood, and it's not an approved zoned activity. So we wanted to weight it so the higher percentage of full-time residents, there's less percentages of allowable STRs, because then we will reduce the impact on full-time residents. And the data of if you are in county or out of county, if you own a property and you don't live in Park County, your mailing address is not in Park County. And so that's how we determine if it's somebody who's living here or somebody who owns a second home. And if they own a second home, they're much less likely to be bothered by a short-term rental because they're not here full-time. And so we wanted to, people were saying, please, we've got all this activity going on around our homes. And so that was the logic we used on first density. The higher the density of developed lots in a neighborhood, the more reduction of STRs to help reduce impact to citizens living there. And then we did it by how many are full-time residents. And then by acres, the smaller the acre, the fewer the short-term rentals, because the small acreage, the neighbor impacts you more. And so we took all of the input we got over the last several years and set up this formula to try to help respect what people were asking us to do.
In a mathematical equation, not just our own subjective judgment.
Right. So the math does the work. We can't be blamed for having preferential treatment anywhere, because the numbers are the numbers and they're empirical, and it just does the math and makes the decision.
What's the formula for P?
The question is, what's the formula for P on your list?
Well, we're going to let Brandon finish first.
Yeah,
okay, so go
just keep in mind, this is actually a working document. So as many of these iterations that we've had, some of these, like STR improved, this was a column that, you know, was in an earlier iteration. Same with this. We were trying to figure out, well, you know, what makes sense from a limitation standpoint. So these are just arbitrary numbers that were put in here, and they don't hold any weight to this particular application or this particular calculation. I just left them in there just based on, you know, I wanted to see how much this document has changed. This will not be the final version. We do have plans to share this with the public, you know, so that the final product, you guys are versed on exactly how this calculation works.
So if I may, Brandon, the colored columns are the ones you're really utilizing. The other is data,
correct,
information, results that, yep, may or may not be used in your final calcs.
Yeah, and I was having, you know, as many iterations as we had, and some of this stuff connected to other columns and stuff, so when I would take a column out, it would completely change the calculations, and so I had a method that made sense, and I just didn't want to ruin it. So, but we can get that, you know, we'll obviously get that cleaned up, but this is a working document, so just bear with the... that's why I've colored everything that's really pertinent to this particular application. So again, weighted averages based on what Amy described, and so that essentially, you know, is then you know further calculated into this column R, which you'll see in the formula. It's basically taking the total. So the other deliverable that was given to the board is this percentage of total lots. So this was a total percentage that if we said, you know, hey, let's do it this way, and we'll just say there's a certain percentage across all the entire county, what would that percentage look like? And through conversation, we decided that 10% made sense, which gives us a total raw number of 1,107, which you'll see is the 10% of this total improved number, 1107. And so then moving to the column R here and how we got to the calculation of total allowable STRs. So it's taking that 1107 and then dividing it by the index. And then that gives that number.
Can I just have a quick question?
Sure.
Because it was not explained to me directly. Your subdivision index, what is that calculation a result from?
So that is the result of your weighted averages that was your deliverable.
Okay.
So the 20% weighted on acre size, 30% weighted on density, and 50% on percentage of county ownership.
Thank you.
Yep. And then, of course, you know, the total amount of STRs allowable has to equal the total amount of that percentage of 1107. So this is a normal or a statistical dispersion of that index based on that constriction of 1107. So it uses the math to basically disperse based on that formula and the weighted averages to arrive at that number. So that's the means and methods. I hope I explained it well. I'm not a super good explainer when it comes to these things, but so I had to use colors. Any questions from the board regarding how we got there? I think, you know, maybe a rhetorical question, but we've definitely talked about this a lot. I do want to switch real quick before I ask you any questions. Just for full transparency, so this, what you're looking at, is the question that we came together last time. What do we do with meets and bounds? And so this also was shared to each commissioner individually, and, you know, we tried to think about this, well, you know, if we just do it across the entire county, or do we have some kind of parameters where, based on processing, where do these STRs that come into us, you know, we got to have some parameters. So we did this by fire district. So the exact same calculations that I just described on subdivisions was applied to this. And so that gives, you know, an extra 113 available STRs in the meets and bounds regions by fire district. And so you will see on the ordinance that it's actually, the appendix to the ordinance that they're just the raw numbers, so they're just the allowable numbers. But the meets and bounds is included in that at the end. So, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Commissioner Gimmer.
You did not cut me off. I was going to ask you where the meets and bounds document was.
Perfect. All right, so that's basically, I believe, you know, a great approach to absolve the board from any kind of preferential treatment, as Commissioner Mitchell explained. It's completely math-based, whether you agree with it or not. You know, that's, I think, when we get to public comment, I would be interested to hear what your thoughts are on this. You know, Because at some point, whether, you know, we model off of Summit County and we just say, you know, here are zone districts, there are still elements, whether it's the 10% or the weighted averages that the board needs to decide, there still are some elements in which the board has to have the responsibility of saying, hey, this is what we feel would be fair to the county. And, you know, you could say Summit County may or may not be fair, but there's many different ways in which this could be derived. But I think the common goal is that there has to be some kind of limitation, because if there isn't, then what does that look like in 5, 10, 15 years from now, where we're constantly having bleed over from Breckenridge and that kind of thing? So I think from policy, you know, we've, in my opinion, we've done a really good job of getting to some sort of limitation. And again, we can certainly, you know, move the numbers. We can up the percentage of allowable or however the board decides. But I think it's a good basis and a good starting point to develop some kind of means and methods that, you know, make sense. And so I think we're there. Any other questions from the board regarding the spreadsheets and how we've derived our numbers?
Not on those two questions, no. Okay. You derived your numbers. I believe that is what we've talked about multiple times. And the spreadsheet, understand there's a few kinks still to be worked out, but it's pretty close.
Just for my edification, we added an additional, 107 units or somewhere in that neighborhood on the meets and bounds side?
113.
So it puts us somewhere around 1,200, 1,250, a total maximum licenses under this scenario. We are. How many licenses do we have today?
Between 300 and 400.
Okay. That are registered.
Well, you were between 300 and 400 was the answer.
Between 300 and 400, our SDR coordinator reported.
Okay, so that's part of the illustration of the problem. Of we have this particular industry in advance. A state, if you will, because of our proximity to other playgrounds. We have a shortage of pillows in this county. We don't have a lot of lodging establishments that are commercial, that are commercially successful. So this does fill a niche. It does meet a need. It's just, again, the community impacts. And one of the things we looked at with small lot high density was not the effect of the owner, renter, operator, but the effect of the neighborhood. We get monthly reports.
Second-ranked reports that we get.
Of all the EMS calls that go to properties around Park County and those that are STRs. We have a lot of repeat visitors to specific locations. So we see some of it just from a data standpoint. Where are there issues that require additional resources? EMS, fire, police, all that stuff comes into the whole health safety and welfare process. So we're trying to be responsible and respectful of that, as well as property rights and allow people to use the free enterprise system. So there's my preamble to that. We have a lot of people, I'm sure, that want to give us some information.
Yeah, and I just
anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to add because I think some of this, you know, the shock, the sticker shock, I guess we'll call it. Some of this might clear up some of it. So I believe we have in our internal processes. So just pick a subdivision. Let's say that we find that there are more STRs than what we're seeing here as total allowable. I believe we're flexible. I believe that we're going to basically deal with that situation as well. If you have owned an STR, you haven't been a problem, you know, that's fine. We can probably go over the number, but that's up to you guys to decide too. So it's more of a question because it's an internal conversation that staff and I have had, because we know that when we get to this point, this is going to be a point of consternation. And so we do need to figure out whether it's, hey, you know, if they played by the rules, they don't, and they're over, then fine. You know, that's up for you guys to decide. But I think, you know, and then just make it an element of attrition, you know, after the fact. But that would be something that I think we should probably clear up, that many of the public may have questions regarding, well, what happens if I'm the eighth person, right? And so it's a valid question, and I just wanted to make sure that I made a point to say that, because we have had internal conversations about that.
Thank you. I think attrition is the proper mechanism. If there are more STRs currently licensed in a neighborhood than are allowed by this formula, and they are doing no harm, we're going to just let it go until homes are sold, people get out of the business, and attrition rates go down. Because we're not going to punish anybody if they're doing a good job, but we want to try to respect the quality of life of everybody who lives in the neighborhood. So I think that's the proper mechanism.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I believe that when it comes to those scenarios, case-by-case scenarios are always very important to look at, but that also leads to an evidential potential of people stating that some people are being unfairly treated versus the other ones, so that's all something that needs to be looked at. I love the idea of you're already there and you have shown there's been no major complaint system driven to the county from that specific STR, then that absolutely, I believe that those individuals can fall within that.
Right, and then in a specific neighborhood, start a wait list. When attrition occurs, then there's a wait list on who comes on top of the list can apply.
Yeah, I believe we have addressed the wait list within the ordinance.
Yeah. As far as the wait list goes, I have...
Would you mind announcing your name? Sorry.
No, I'm Georgia Comstock. as far as the wait list goes, I have given a lot of thought to how that's going to be done. I have not gotten a written example of that as of this moment in time, because we've been working on so much other stuff. But there will be a written policy or a written notification that they can look at on the county's website as to how we process.
Some sort of a notification and guidance of how it functions. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, both Brandon and Georgia. We appreciate the overview and the assistance and all the effort and work you've put into this. It's been quite a journey. I think we've been working on this for, it seems like eternity, but maybe...
I believe it's a year and a half.
A year ago, yeah. So it has been a year. Quite a year. All right. This is a public hearing. Go ahead, sir.
Sir, I was just going to say, I'm going to leave the spreadsheet up in case that any public comment needs to be, and we can verify. But I'll be at the back of the room.
Sounds fair enough. Okay, since we're in a public hearing environment, we had staff give us information and edification on how we got to this point. Because this is a public hearing, we want to give each of you the opportunity to address us with your concerns. We offer you basically 3 minutes to give us your comments. We ask that you not address anyone but us. And since staff's in the back of the room, it's kind of hard to not look at them in the back of the room, but please make your comments to us. If you've heard someone say something that you agree with, simply say so. We would appreciate not just continuous repetitive comments and those kinds of things. And this is the beginning of this process. I know you're mostly here because you have a vested interest in this. We all do. As residents and citizens, we all share in this conundrum that we're facing, allowing property rights and free enterprise system, and yet having life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in your house. That, to me, is the bottom line. So with that, we're going to open it up, and I'm going to open it up for the people in the room first. I know we see a lot of people, and there's approximately 100 and some people on Zoom. For public comment. So what we ask you to do is come up to the podium. If you want to form a line, that's great. We'll go, let's say, 4 or 5 people at the podium, then we'll do 4 or 5 people on Zoom, and we'll alternate that until we get through everybody who wants to give us some information. Yeah, so there's a sign-in sheet here. We would ask you to go ahead and begin that process, if you would be so kind. Do you have any questions about how the process will go? If not, then we'll go ahead and entertain the process that I've outlined. So whoever would like to come up and join us, I'm the timer, and we will give you consideration of the time for your concerns.
Jason has it.
And we ask you to just name yourself for the record. Here's why. Our wonderful county clerk has to keep a record of this and then make minutes of it. So on the list, the reason it's there is mainly for the record, so she knows who spoke. That's why. So that I just wanted to clarify, we are not the principal's office. Microphones are not our enemies. They're our friends. Welcome.
Do you want me to put my name on it?
Yeah, please. Why don't you sign in, and then you can pass the clipboard down and have people signing in while they're waiting to take their term. And then we'll have a record just for our minutes.
And then make sure the speaker's on and announce your name.
Checkity check. Can you hear me?
Yep. Gotcha. You're what?
I've also put my business cards up there, so if anyone needs to email or you think of something later, you can send that over, and I'll make sure it's a part of the public record.
Sounds good.
All right. My name is Todd Schrader. I live in Park County. I came down here because I'm a lowly real estate peddler, and I find it disturbing. I don't feel there's anything free about a restricted market. You talk about free enterprise, but if people can't buy with the anticipation of being able to rent their property up here, it's going to negatively affect property values. It's going to affect who can buy property. We're seeing over in Blue River that this waiting list is translating directly into days on the market and reduced values. I don't think that's a winning formula for many of your constituents. I also don't think Berland Estates is going to experience the same demand for short-term rentals that Valley of the Sun will. So an across-the-board, one-size-fits-all formula isn't going to serve any community very well. You know, the people in Valley of the Sun, there's going to be a lot more demand for STRs there. And the people living in Berland Estates, where it's almost fully developed and everyone has a job and lives there full time, they're commuting to Denver. The people up here that are the locals, they're part of a tourist economy. If we limit the commerce in our area here, we're limiting the scope of any business. How are we going to fill restaurants we're having trouble filling now if we limit the amount of business that renters can do here? That's our bread and butter. We are, what other businesses do we have here? We don't have a big Google distribution center. We don't have commerce here. We have a one-trick economy, and you want to limit it, I'm against it. That's what I came here to say.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Hey, members of the board, thank you very much for listening to me. My name is Louis Cirillo, and ironically for work, I'm a principal product manager. I work remotely in tech. What that means is that fundamentally every single day, I have to evaluate for businesses whether we're solving the right problems and whether the solutions that are presented adequately solve those problems that were presented. When I sat here and listened to this particular overview, I heard a series of problems that feel like not problems, and I heard solutions that to me don't seem like they're actually going to solve anything and only create more harm. In particular, I have access on my computer right now to a database that shows every single available STR location in Park County. There are currently 1,003 of them. I can see exactly where they are on any platform that they're at, and I'm an engineer and I can pull this data myself. As a result, I can also see right now that there's well over 223 of them in the area of Valley of the Sun, and on your sheet you have the instance mark 7 available allowances. I'm sorry, but even with your idea of churn and attrition, The problems that you stated about EMS calls and everything else are likely going to be there for the next 5 to 10 years, regardless, because you're not going to be able to get rid of them. So that means that already on its face, you're not solving that problem. Secondly, if that is a problem, that we're reduced in EMS policing capacity, etc., a better solution to this would simply be to add more and charge us for it. I live in Valley of the Sun, full-time with my wife, who's also a custom home builder. Most of the projects that we take on are for people who want to spend the majority of their time here but may not be able to. We can't give them their license. Well, your shifting is not the price of the property. All you're changing, like Breckenridge, is who can afford it. It's the people who can afford it, like myself, remote tech workers, who can own a property and not have to rely on supplemental income. And that's what you're going to do. You're going to change the licensure of who can be here and who can't. So when I see the issues that were presented, I think the biggest harm that you're going to do by restricting the amount of available SDRs is to our businesses, our restaurants, people that you're going to hear from behind me, who many of them I know from working in the STR field, who rely on this for their income. Our cleaner Christie, thinking about the guys who run property management. There's $500 million of economic impact driven to this area by tourism alone, and you guys are about to destroy it with this policy. I think about no more construction, and construction is the second largest employer here. There are plenty of people who I talk to, and I'm on the phone with the banks doing the lending, who literally could not afford to build the house or run it, even if it's their retirement dream home, simply because of that. So in the respect of time, I see that you're probably going to give me that. I believe that my request to all three of you up here is that you blatantly deny the proposal set forth. I think the mathematics are horribly incorrect. I do think Breckenridge has done it incorrectly, and it has not helped anybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Christian Bjornis. Thank you for your time. I also live in Valley of the Sun. There's a lot of representation in the valley here. 32% of my business is STRs, and that's 7 times the limit that is on the list. Now, I wholeheartedly agree that if you have a rental that's on a third of an acre or 75% of an acre versus a 15-acre lot, those renters are high impact. Let's face it, they're dummies. So I think we need to have enforcement over these strict limitations. I understand the desire for limitations. I want it. I'm literally surrounded by 4 rentals who was just tailgating me this morning down the road. But I think we need more thought that goes into this formula, because you are going to be significantly reducing the amount of money that's coming into these neighborhoods and funding all of these services, the Alma Firehouse, the new Hartzell Ambulance District. So we're not going to have as much funds coming in if we restrict it this drastically. So I think we need to focus on actual enforcement. So I have somebody to call when I'm picking up garbage at my neighbor's property because the renters let a bear get into the can. So restrict it. Don't go crazy. I mean, I don't want, let's say, 9 out of 10 properties in my neighborhood to be a rental, but some of them need to be rentals. They just need to be controlled. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Welcome.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Thanks for having this. And my name is Terry Sandmeyer. I run Park Property Management. So I'm in the property management. And about 30-40% is short-term rentals that we do as well. First off, like the first part of the ordinance of having the licensing and having a two-year, three-year licensing once you do reapply, I think it's a great idea, and I think you probably need to expedite that a little bit further. Maybe just 1 year of a probationary period, or not even a probationary period at all. It's going to reduce a lot of staff hours, and it's going to just help out people getting through that whole process and being able to manage it. Enforcement has been one of the biggest issues of this of the short-term rentals that's been coming out here. All the complaints is from lack of enforcement, people just throwing people into a house and not trying to bother with any kind of the county processes, which will still continue to happen. But now you guys are looking at trying to figure out how that is. By limiting, I think the math is flawed. The math is straight. But the methods of that math is flawed of trying to figure out how many short-term rentals are going to go into an area. I think Valley of the Sun is one of the perfect examples where you got over 200 short-term rentals and you're seeing there's only 7 that's going to be allowed in it. And so then you're going to have an attrition, which is going to bring out, you're not going to be able to have a new short-term rental in there for 20 plus years. It's one of those things that we're starting to see over in Summit County area, over in that area. So, some discernment and how you're going to limit it if you guys do limit it. I'm opposed to any kind of limitations. I think the licensing and enforcement is going to force a lot of people out in the first place. There's already a change in the demographics out there of who's renting and the amount of how much you can actually make on a short-term rental. Somebody's buying a short-term rental, trying to pay their mortgage, they're not meeting those means already, and so they're getting out of it. They're either selling or they're switching to long-term rentals, which I'm seeing an increase in a lot of available long-term rentals in the area, and so anybody that's looking for a long-term rental, they're able to get it. So the housing shortage is not there. So overall, the limitation on the short-term rentals, I think the free market's going to be able to curtail who's going to be able to stay in it. Enforcement, have your fees, have the application, making sure everybody's safe, making sure the people coming in and out are safe, and we can make it the best for everybody, and we can have a good economy all the way around with our tourism, and it's going to balance out to where it needs to be. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your comments. We appreciate it. Okay, one more, and then we're going to go to Zoom. Mr.
Scott Dodge, 13.
Scott Dodge. Just had a blank, Scott. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I'm not sure what cap I'm wearing today. 1317 Meadow Drive in Fairplay. I'm here to speak on the real estate side of things today, and I apologize for missing most of the meeting. It's a busy day today. I wanted to just thank you guys for the update that you've done on the short-term rental ordinance, because it's actually going in the right direction, with the exception of this part. And obviously, that's what everybody's here to kind of talk about today. As a local real estate broker in both Summit and Park counties, I have experienced this over in Summit County the most. We didn't have the issue over here in Park at this point, but we've seen values. And our assessor, for our assessors here today, has access to the MLS. You guys can pull the data, go look what's happening in Summit County and Wilderness specifically, which is in Summit County. It's not in one of the towns. And see what's happened to the values over the last 3 years since they put in the restrictions that they've had. We've seen values back off significantly, not to mention the HOA issues and the insurance issues, which is a whole nother ball of wax. But property values is what's important, and that's what we need to thrive as a community. We need property values to stay high so we can collect those tax revenues. The majority of the properties up in the Valley of the Sun area, in specific, were built as second homes, and we know that because the builders are here to build those homes as second homes. They were never intended to be residences for full-time living. With that being said, we've limited it, and you guys have done a great job by limiting the occupancy and then also creating really good rules and regulations for enforcement so that the problems that we have in our area are non-existent or less impactful. But to put these types of numbers in an area that's mostly recreational based and has been used as your revenue, which you guys now collect 6%, so keep that in mind. How do you get that down? And we've experienced in areas of Summit County, as Mr. Sandemeyer mentioned, where you can't get a license. It could be a decade or more because of the attrition. So Wilderness is already, Summit County has already changed Wilderness to allow for a waiting list. And they did that because they didn't have a waiting list before, but they had no way to turn over and allow for new licensing to come in. So the attrition rate here in Park County is way less than it is in Summit. You know, we have a 3 to 5 year turnaround period over in Summit County. It's probably a little more than that over here. So you're not going to see that same attrition that you see over here, that you see over in Summit County, that you see over here. So that's going to be an issue for new people going forward. Think about property owners. Think about property values. Think about the second homeowners that can't speak and can't vote. That's where we need to be thinking about when we're talking about this ordinance and how it's going to impact the county. And I get all the problems that we have. I've heard it all for many years. You guys have been working on this ordinance for 2 years. I just would say, think about this piece again. Think about the enforcement and think about the long-term impact that you're going to create with this. So just be careful with that. Thank you.
Right on 3 minutes. Really good.
Let's go to the Zoom.
Go to Zoom.
All right.
You pick first.
I'm just going to go with who is showing up first. John Brinkworth, I'm going to ask you to unmute. You've got 3 minutes.
Hi, can you hear me?
Welcome, John.
Hey, everybody. Calling from Floyd's Knobs, Indiana.
I can't hear him.
All right, hold on, John.
Wait a minute, we can't hear you.
Hold on, John, we can't hear you. Let us address our volume here.
Try again, please.
Not yet. No, we're just barely hearing you now.
Okay.
Give us just a second. We're still working on IT here is working on the volume.
We have our on-call tech going on the other side of our podium, working on why we don't have sound on incoming from the Zoom calls. Test. I can hear in the hearing.
can't get Zoom going. Let's just take the audience.
We're going to give IT a few more minutes to try to work the incoming speakers from Zoom. Somebody really messed up our settings, but you want to keep taking from the room here?
Why don't we go ahead
online,
and
just make
use of the time and not have you setting for nothing. If you have more comments, please come up, sign up from the audience, and we'll take your comments while we're working on a technological. If you have anything you'd like to say. Don't everybody knock down the door at once. You don't have to say anything. It's okay. This is your opportunity. I'll just make a comment of observation. You mentioned what Summit County does, and you guys have crossed over to Summit County. I've been watching what Summit County's been doing with STRs for the 3 years I've been a commissioner. I would agree that the laboratory example of not what to follow is what Summit County has experienced. And I've taken to heart what their iterations and journey has been to get to where they are today and the percentages. And that's kind of one of the things we were looking at, was including percentages of existing. What Summit did that I thought was had merit was, since they have so much more experience back to the late 90s with SDRs, if it had a route of existing transportation and was set up for existing visitors, they would look at that percentage different. If there was not available resources on a regular basis, they may look at the percentages different. I'm not looking for comment. I'm just making comments till we can get the Zoom going. So I've been cognizant of the differences that Summit's gone through and the people that were licensed and then pulled and the people that made their mortgage on the license they had and then they lost it. So not indifferent to that. As an appraiser, I'm very much attuned to property values and what happens. So it's trying to balance that, and I hear you loud and clear, and I'm simply tap dancing until we can get to Zoom to work, if that will work. So I'm not going to take comments, Scott. Okay.
Okay. All right, I'm John Evans, by the way.
Hey, John. I'm John Brinkworth.
Hey, John.
Good name.
Yeah, well, thank you. I come by honestly. I'm five generations.
That's really funny. I'm actually John the Third.
You're John the Third. Well, I'm not a John. I'm a third, but I am named after
great-great-grandfather. Can you hear us, John?
That's great.
John?
Well, I guess we just sit here and wait.
John?
Maybe we should try and
Can you unmute? I don't know. I'd have to reboot it.
Well, then, why don't you just run it with each? I can You guys, I think we have a plan. I'm going to mute John Evans. John Brinkworth, we can hear through Christopher's phone. And so I think if Christopher holds his phone up to the microphone, we should be able to hear comments. So let's try it that way, and we will see if we can get through this, because we want to hear from everybody. And John, you are unmuted.
Which John is this?
John Brinkworth. Brinkworth.
Thank you.
Well,
he was unmuted.
I don't know what to say.
You and John Evans are still having a conversation.
Yeah. I cannot. Can you unmute?
Okay, let me find them. Hold on. Oh, wait. There it is. Is it the 303 number or is it your name? Your name or the phone number?
You got it.
Okay. All right.
You guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, John.
Okay. Hey, thanks. Thanks for your time today. I'm calling from Floyd's Knobs, Indiana. And my question is pertaining to the limits in the neighborhoods and how current applicants to the short-term license will be viewed.
This is time for public comment, which you're more than welcome to make comments, but we don't go into dialogue on this as to answering those questions at this time.
Yeah, so as applications come in, it will be looked at. Once this ordinance is passed, we're right now just wanting to hear your comments. It will be then worked through once we hear and get community's input on multiple hearings we're going to have. So please let us know your concerns, and we will write them down and take them into consideration. Thanks.
And I would just say as a follow-up to that, because of all the technological problems, there's always the standard backup of just sending us an email or a written letter, whatever those look like these days, of your comments so that we have it for the record.
Okay. Appreciate that.
All right. Next, I'm going to have Katie Stamp. I'm going to ask you to unmute.
Welcome, Katie.
Thank you. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Katie Stamp. I've been a Park County resident for 19 years. I'm a local realtor and business owner. I'm raising my kids here. My husband's a firefighter serving our community, and I'm deeply invested in Park County. My perspective comes from a place of caring deeply about what is best for our community and the long-term future of Park County. I want to share my concerns about this ordinance and the harm that I believe it'll cause if it's adopted as it's currently written. I want to be clear that I support having short-term rental ordinance in place. The original ordinance was necessary, and I understand why it was adopted. I believe that reasonable regulation matters, and we should have clear rules that protect our neighbors, our quality of life. Obviously, I live here. This is my home. My concern is not with having an ordinance. It's with how far this revised version goes. I understand that the county is trying to be fair by using a formula based on lot size and density and subdivision data. On paper, that sounds reasonable, but really in practice, it only works in theory. Real issues in our neighborhoods aren't being caused by numbers on a spreadsheet. They're being caused by a lack of enforcement. The rigid subdivisions in the proposed ordinance do not distinguish between responsible long-term property owners and the bad actors. Instead, they punish families who have followed the rules, invested in their homes, contributed positive to their neighborhoods and their community as a whole. Many of our clients are local individuals. These are not large-scale investors. Short-term rental income is what makes ownership in Park County possible. Removing that income will force people to sell homes they love and had planned to keep long-term. It'll force sales that have lasting effects on our real estate market, reduce property values for our community, weaken tax base that supports essential services like our first responders, fire districts, roads, and schools. And I also want to raise a broader concern. Park County is a rural community. We're not just an extension of Breckenridge. We need solutions that fit our scale, our resources, and our values. When rural communities apply resort-style regulations, there are long-term effects. Scott mentioned them. I think these will be damaging. These policies often increase costs, reduce local ownership, push out the very families that, and workers who give our community its character and are the boots on the ground in our community. Over time, this leads to fewer full-time residents, more forced sales, a community that becomes harder to sustain, local businesses struggle, volunteerism declines, tax burdens shift to those who remain. Instead of strengthening our rural community, this resort-style policy can unintentionally hollow them out. I also want to ask a practical question. How does the county intend to enforce an ordinance of this scale when its current rules have been difficult to enforce?
Thank you.
Katie, I want to apologize, Katie, but your time is up. 3 minutes. Katie, thank you.
All right, next, Janelle, I will ask you to unmute. You've got 3 minutes. Thank you.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Janelle Schock. I'm the town administrator for the town of Fairplay. And my only comments, and I brought this up, I think, in a couple different forums and spoken to, I think, County Administrator Lucas Meyer and prior Administrator Mike Smith. We would like to see something in the ordinance that provides the town the authority to sign off on those units and approve those units that are on our sanitation system. Outside our borders and maybe on both our water and our sanitation. I didn't see that in the ordinance. And I believe Alma would probably be in the same boat if there are any units in that area. So I'm just renewing that request. And then I did have a question, or was just say the, it was kind of confusing about the use of a fireplace, because it implies to me, just the general public, if you were looking at it, that you can't even use a fireplace if it's in the house, because it doesn't indicate that it is just for outside except that one section. So I just wanted to bring that up, and that was in section 7G4. And then safety inspections, I know you were talking about that. Here at the town of Fairplay, we require them in every single unit. They are paramount to the safety of the guests and reduction of impacts on our law enforcement and emergency medical services. I'm not sure, you know, you could have a house that's built in 20 years ago and they have added things that you don't know about, such as a hot water heater that's not plumbed in correctly or a gas fireplace or something of that nature. So I do believe that you should consider inspections of every short-term rental unit for the safety of the people who will be staying there, whether it is them providing you certificates of inspection for those electric, propane, natural gas, or fireplaces. We do that at the town, and then we also do, upon approval of the very first time for a, I know this would be difficult for your staff, and maybe it's farmed out to somebody else, but an actual inspection of that home to make sure they haven't built an unsafe deck or put in stairs that shouldn't be there. So we use that as an opportunity to go in and make sure that the entire home is safe. And again, like I said, I know that'd be a huge undertaking for you, but I do think it's important. I did want to applaud you all on this great work. Your staff has done a great job, and I know you're in a no-win position because you're never going to make everyone happy, but I know you're all trying to do the right thing and make sure that everybody's protected, property rights, visitors, and our first responders. So thank you very much, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Janelle. Appreciate it.
All right, Russ B., I'm going to ask you to unmute.
Hi, my name is Russ Blacker. I'm a short-term property manager, actually, there. And, so this would obviously destroy our business. And all the people that work for us and live in Park County would be unemployed, pretty much. It would destroy the tax base for Park County. And and I also feel like this is kind of regulation without representation. If this was put to a vote, for people that live in Park County, there's no way this would pass. This is going to damage the community beyond repair. I would just urge them, you guys, to let the free market exist. Yes, you can regulate it with enforcement and making sure that they're good players, which we want them to be good players, because if they're not, then they don't do well on Airbnb. And also, speaking to the insurance, each homeowner that I work with has short-term rental insurance through usually State Farm. And I would question how many times the county has been sued or had legal issues because of short-term rentals, and how much more likely they are to get sued if something like this passes from all the homeowners. I just think that really it will devastate the community. And even if I have to go find a new job, it's all these homeowners that are not here today or are not voicing their, where did we get that 10%? That was just, you know, arbitrarily picked from a commissioner. It's not going to help. Let's just focus on enforcement. That would be my two cents.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yep. All right. I will ask Rhonda to unmute.
Can I just take 1 second?
Yes, you can.
Just to remind everybody, this is only a first reading. There will be a second reading. There's not going to be a vote today or anything of that matter. So just to remind everybody, this is a process. We are involving the citizens. We do want your feedback. We do anticipate multiple changes from here on out. Thank you.
Thank you, Lucas. Rhonda, are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you. Welcome.
Great. Thank you. So my name is Rhonda Ray Franklin. I own a small company that operates all three STRs, midterm rentals, and long-term rentals here in Park County. I'm also a resident of Park County. I've actually worked with Georgia there in the STR office quite often for the past couple of years. I'll start off by on a positive note and say I applaud the work that has been done in the STR office. They work very hard. I know they've gotten very behind. And so when this was brought to my attention just yesterday, and I was able to finally sit down in my home office this morning and look over the numbers and all the sheets and the 15 pages prior to the numbers sheet, when I looked at the numbers sheet, I think, like most people, I honestly first laughed, and then second, as I'm looking at it, my phone started blowing up from my employees. Even though I'm a very small business that I run very personally myself and take care of my properties in person on a daily basis, take care of my guests on a daily basis, I am definitely one of the good players and make sure that, you know, all of my Airbnbs that I do run here as Airbnbs, they're all solid five-star Airbnbs. As well, my guests are five-star guests, and they're, you know, impeccable guests, and I'm proud to have them here. I have multiple guests that return here to Park County. I just looked as I was listening to other people talk about the tax impact on our county. One of my properties alone, over Airbnb last year, submitted just under $7,000 in taxes from one property to the county. That's just one property. And that property is in Valley of the Sun, up at almost 12,000 feet, where most people do not live full time, because it's difficult to live full time at almost 12,000 feet. If you've ever tried to sleep at almost 12,000 feet, you don't get very much sleep. So there's a lot of properties up there. There's a new house that's right across the street from my big chalet up there at nearly 12,000 feet in Valley of the Sun. They are solely an STR. That's why they built it. And so they're pretty new. And I know that, those owners that live in Denver are now scared that because they haven't been operating very long that they'll be on the chopping block. I have been listening very, very closely, to everything that was said, by the people that are putting this into trying to put this into play. I realize this is preliminary, but you know, people are talking about 223 STRs in Valley of the Sun. Those are just the licensed ones. Okay, I know you guys realize that because at one point the county, as you all know, probably, I hope, put out a map that showed all of the ones that were not in compliance. There are probably, I would say, well over.
Rhonda, I have to stop you. You've passed your 3 minutes. I apologize.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it.
All right. Next, Ben Binger. I will ask you to unmute.
Welcome, Ben.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you for taking comments. My name is Ben, and my family and I have owned a second home in Valley of the Sun for several years. We both use it personally for family use, and we occasionally rent it out as a licensed short-term rental. I'll say as a side comment, never having great success breaking even. And on the tail of that, I'd like to strongly object to this proposed ordinance in the strongest terms possible. Park County is not Breckenridge, not Lake Tahoe, not Estes Park. We're not Summit County, and we are not situated minutes away from a resort town. Yet this ordinance would impose some of the most restrictive subdivision caps in the entire region, and yet there's no factual findings or legal justification for it. And I've heard it stated repeatedly in this meeting this afternoon that this ordinance would supposedly follow models from those other jurisdictions. And yet this short-term rental percentage that is being highlighted here is materially lower than any of these other regions that are being highlighted without findings even explaining or justifying that deviation. Weighing short-term rental caps based on the presence of full-time residents is not a impact-based regulation. Instead, it's a preference-based exclusion. Residency status has no rational relationship to anything from septic capacity, permitted occupancy, fire risk, noise complaints. All of these are already addressed and are already being heavily regulated in these proposed or existing ordinances at a property-by-property level. I pay taxes on the same basis as any resident, and materially more as a licensed short-term rental owner, while my property, my family, and any guests that have ever stayed there consume fewer county resources. Using residency and assumed service demand to restrict lawful property use constitutes an arbitrary allocation of burden, not actual regulation or what others have already talked about, enforcement. Public safety impacts arise and have arisen from specific properties and specific ongoing conduct with those properties, and yet this ordinance is not specifically focusing on an increase in enforcement tools to address the repeated EMS needs that have been stated, fire, law enforcement, whatever. Absent the documented property-level findings tying these supposed caps to measurable service capacity constraints, this proposed ordinance is narrowly tailored. I think the math is wildly incorrect. It lacks a rational nexus to public health or safety. And it's really basic due process requirements for those of us that are property owners. Thank you.
All right, I will ask Ryan Miller to unmute. You've got 3 minutes.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome.
Thank you. I am a homeowner and resident of Park County. We're not in the Valley of the Sun, and we don't short-term rent at all, if that matters. I appreciate the conversation on short-term rentals in Park County and support the augmentation of enforcement, but I'm concerned we're unnecessarily punishing Park County homeowners with the ordinance limit and this plan is written for no material benefit. There's history from this issue nationally that I think we need to learn from as well. I think Lake Tahoe was brought up earlier. A court actually struck down this exact limitation plan for that area as unconstitutional in 2025 after 6 years of material economic damage and to the community and zero improvement in any metric I can find. Myself, this career has zero local opportunities because Park County currently has virtually no healthcare infrastructure. We chose Park County as our forever home due to the sheer beauty of the area and due to an offer at one of the small handful of primary care facilities within a reasonable driving distance. If for any reason we temporarily need to work elsewhere, short-term rental income is the only way we can keep our home. This cap would take that from us. We would be forced to sell, and it wouldn't solve anything. An evaluation of Park County's data, the data strongly suggests an enforcement problem, as several others have said, not a regulation problem. A significant percent of homes in this county already sit vacant as second homes, and the Park County Impact Assessment admits these homes do not fall within the affordable workforce housing category. Medium home price is $580,000 in Park County, while most local jobs pay around $35,000 a year. I haven't heard anyone talk about this. Expecting these homes to only utilize long-term rentals is simply not a viable option. The math does not work. Most resident owners will be forced to sell. I'm an engineer, and I couldn't agree more with what the product manager first spoke about earlier. As has been said on this call, we should also prove this with math, but there's a critical rule to this. You have to measure the right thing. The math we've seen is deeply flawed. It adds far too much weight to improve lot sizes and doesn't actually take into account the needs of our county or its homeowners. Looks like I'm running out of time here, but I want to say that your county chef spreadsheet shows that 937 of Berlin's 1,000 homeowners live in this county. I think the real problem is outside investors, but you're not restricting them with this plan. You're stripping rights from Park County residents. The limit on this process should be non-starter. It reads as punishment first plan that with no temporary or hardship exemptions whatsoever. Please rethink this plan or just enforce the existing ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Samantha Burton, I'm going to ask you to unmute.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
This is Samantha Burton. I have been a lifelong Park County resident. Many of you know me. I worked in Indian Mountain as a district manager for 12 years at the Indian Mountain Community Center there. And I've run a short-term rental service company for 20-plus years in the county. I currently employ 7 people, and then my husband and I work with these people full-time. And this ordinance, as you state, and the numbers that you've put out would literally put me out of business and everyone that works with me. Just some notes on the numbers here, just for an example, because I've heard enforcement. I truly believe this is an enforcement issue and not that we need a new ordinance. You put an ordinance in place. I completely agreed with it the first time that you put it out. There were some items that I disagreed with, but we're doing it again, and the problem isn't that it's the ordinance is flawed. It's that the enforcement is flawed. There is no backup to what you want to happen. And Commissioner Whistle, you said it a little while ago. There are, I think, 300 or 400, you said, permitted licensed STRs in the county right now. And you show, I mean, we all know that there's way more than even the numbers you guys are talking about maybe allowing. Now, I added that up, and I did some just simple math here. We've got 1,169 permits allowed in the total county from your math, which we've now discovered is obviously flawed. And I could bring up, like, just an example. Aspen Park subdivision, there's 103 lots. There's 7 improved. Total allowed STRs would be 14. Excuse me? Something's wrong with this. There's not even 14 homes there. So how could you have 70 or 14 STRs? There's 3 of those on the list just off the that. So I know that the math is flawed. So putting that aside, you've got 1,169 if I add up that total from that list sent out. If you do the $850 application fee and you enforced everyone getting a license, you'd have almost $1 million the first year and the second if you go with your fee schedule here. This would allow you to hire enforcement and more people to process applications. You cannot tell me that $1 million is being spent right now on what you're doing. Then it would afford $300,000 years after if you kept everybody going. This is the problem. When you put it out the first time, you said you have to have one to run a business. You didn't enforce that. There are so many. I personally work for at least 50 of these homeowners.
Samantha, I'm sorry, your time is up.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
The timing on the Zoom, but I like it.
Jason.
Okay.
All right. Next is Leah Taylor. I'll ask you to unmute.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having this meeting, and thank you for giving us a chance to provide feedback. I own a short-term rental in Placer Valley. We purchased it recently, followed the ordinance, have our license, due diligence, great guests, love the area. We bought the home to be our retirement home. We have three little girls. We go up a couple times a year whenever we can and make it work, and this ordinance and the impact it would have for our family is devastating. I know I don't want to repeat what everybody else has said over and over, but I think the impact to those of us who follow the rules, who are good owners, who take care of our guests, who care about the community, this is punishing us that are following the rules. I'd really appreciate the responsible owner classification. You know, that's what we want to be. That's what we take pride in. And with our short-term rental, that's what we want to be. I can't find anything in the ordinance that talks about kind of the overrun limit with current holders and what that means. And down the road, if, you know, for our girls' education, we want to sell the home. This takes away the value that we've invested in and we've cared about and put our family kind of future in. So I'll yield the rest of my time to somebody else. I agree with everybody else is saying. I appreciate your work and thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Julia. We appreciate your comments.
That was Leah.
Pardon me.
Julia, I'll
look at the next one up.
Sorry. Julia, I'll ask you to unmute.
Sorry. Good afternoon, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I represent the Colorado Short-Term Rental Association. While we at COSTRA support responsible short-term rental operations, including well-developed licensing requirements, we have multiple areas of concern within this ordinance. First, regarding the ordinance framework, I respectfully ask the county to clarify the objective, measurable standards that will be used in the implied administrative decisions. Clear criteria protect both the county and applicants by ensuring consistent application and reducing the risk of arbitrary outcomes. Additionally, several operational requirements, such as inspection triggers, documentation demands, and certain prohibitions, appear extensive. It would be helpful to understand the data supporting these provisions. What documented pattern of complaints or safety incidents is driving each major restriction? Regulations are strongest when they are narrowly tailored to address demonstrated harms. Second, on licensing caps, the ordinance limits the number of STR licenses by subdivision and geographic area. Katie commented earlier about resort-style restrictions in rural communities, and she has a really good point. Caps in rural communities can function as arbitrary ceilings that penalize compliant operators without necessarily improving neighborhood outcomes. Quantity limits do not distinguish between well-managed properties and problematic ones. If the goal is nuisance mitigation, targeted enforcement may be more effective than blunt numerical restrictions. Third, on licensing fees. Per Colorado statute, user fees must be directly connected to the actual cost of administering the program. Given the extensive application requirements, fees must truly reflect actual administrative and enforcement costs. Without transparent cost modeling published alongside the ordinance, stakeholders cannot evaluate whether the fees are reasonable or punitive. Transparency on the cost model is essential. Fees that exceed the reasonable cost of regulation risk functioning as revenue measures rather than administrative charges. Lastly, I would be concerned about the administrative lift and additional staff time that other folks have mentioned that would be required to enforce many of the concepts outlined in the draft ordinance. This ordinance lists many restrictions but lacks clearly articulated enforcement pathways with structured escalation, complaint verification standards, or appeal procedures, which can lead to disputes and legal uncertainty. I would ask the DOCC to place this ordinance proposal on a longer-term hold so that more stakeholder engagement, including that of the organization I represent, which promotes fair and equitable policy for short-term rentals in the state of Colorado. Moving forward to second reading at this time would be inappropriate without a proper pause and further analysis of what the county specifically is trying to solve for with this ordinance, what the funds gained from new licensing would be used for, and what the long-term goals are for Park County's rural economy. Thank you for your time and consideration. I would welcome questions or discussion at a later time.
Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it.
All right. I will ask Jason Buzda to unmute.
Hi there. Thank you for the time. I want to echo Lou, Katie, Rhonda, and Russ's comments. I'm not going to repeat all that. The one thing I will repeat, and then I'd like to have a moment of silence for the people whose businesses will go under. The caps will destroy local businesses. Hopefully that sunk in. I want to talk about something else with the rest of my 3 minutes, and that is a part of the business that is hard to do math on, and that's real estate turnover. So real estate turnover is people who are dipping their toes in the STR market, realizing, is this for me or is this not for me? But that turnover is almost the third largest economy in Park County, right? We have septic pumps that happen on turnover. We have surveys, inspections, electrical repairs, plumbing repairs, furnishing, title work, and real estate agent commissions. All of that is what we call pull-through revenue or drag that follows the STR economy, and that is an economy of its own. And by having these caps in place and not allowing new people to enter the market, it slows that churn. It slows that turnover. We're seeing it in Summit. We're seeing it in other places that have capped it. So I'll leave it at that. I appreciate the moment of silence for the people whose businesses will suffer from these, and I hope we can not get to that point.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your comments.
All right. I will ask Jared Ridge to unmute.
Jared, welcome.
Hey there. Sorry about that. Hit the unmute. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Hey, just wanted to voice my my call. I'm a homeowner. I'm a law-abiding citizen up there. This is our second home. We follow the STR guidelines and rules by the book. And I would say there is a bit of self-regulation going on with the market, too, with, you know, good quality neighbors. And those five-star reviews almost self-regulate to ensure that you do have a good home in working order. But just to underscore everything everybody talked about here earlier, if I'm, you know, I'm speaking on behalf of one of the homeowners, we would have to sell. We would have to sell immediately. And, I feel like that would, have a pretty bad impact on the real estate and other economic things up there. It would be pretty devastating because this is also our retirement home. We're hoping to be out of kids within the next year and would love to actually live and spend more time up there. But we have to have STR income help sustain and augment. So that's all I got. I'll give someone else some more of my time, but appreciate if we could just keep this dialogue going. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right. I will ask Patricio Zambra. Or your name's cut off to unmute. Hold on, where I just lost you.
You went away.
Went away. Hold on. Let me see if I can. Zoom starts jumping around. All right, I'll ask you to unmute.
Welcome.
Hey, everybody. My name is Patricio Zambrano. I live long-term in Denver. My second home is in Park County, which I enjoy with my wife and kids. Also, first off, I want to congratulate, you know, the board and everybody for putting out all this information and inviting the public to give out the opinion. That's great. And then kind of moving on here, I do echo what everybody is saying about the impact to the jobs and everything else, right? I don't want to, you know, repeat everything again. What I did wanted to share just a couple of things on how maybe, you know, this could help. The first one is the communication email. So I went on the Park County STR website. There is an email called strparkcountyco.gov. I tried emailing my feedback there. That does not work. It just gets bounced back. So might be something to look into. The second thing is regarding the enforcement, right? So I think it was the product manager that mentioned there are around 1,000 short-term rentals and perhaps those that are not yet licensed. And, you know, if you were to charge, you know, $100 more, right, per year, right, you could easily have, you know, at least one person that does the enforcement. And as an example of enforcement, I don't know if you know this, but for example, if a neighbor calls Airbnb directly on a listing, right, because they're having a party, they're, I don't know, watching the Super Bowl or something, maybe they're angry that the Broncos got kicked out too early or something. You know, they can actually, Airbnb can actually shut that listing down for you, right? So that's some enforcement that could be done, right? For, you know, listings that are not, you know, following the rules or creating too much problems. And then, last but not least here that's actually all I had to say. And I echo what everybody else said. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right, I will ask Mark Ustra to unmute.
Hello. Hi, my name is Mark Ustra. I am part of the Pikes Peak STR Alliance, which represents Park County as well as a few other counties. And I just wanted to give a couple quick comments. The first is, has there been an economic study done with the changes planned for the STR regulations in Park County? It sounds like, based on the public testimony I've been hearing today, that there are many STRs in Valley of the Sun and maybe not so many in other neighborhoods. And so it seems like there's going to be a real negative impact. And I would just encourage, if you had the time and willingness, to do an economic study, really neighborhood by neighborhood. How is this going to impact Park County? So that's my first encouragement and my first comment. The second comment is just when it comes to any sort of regulations, I'd love to see an exception process. So maybe the intent of a regulation is X, Y, and Z, but a homeowner, an STR operator, could say, hey, this was the intent of the regulation, but my STR doesn't fall into that intent, therefore, can I have an exception? So just encourage you to consider perhaps there's exceptions, because blanket rules may seem fair and equitable, but in reality, it doesn't make sense for some people, and it's unfair for some people. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We're going to ask CS, would you give us your name, please? We would like your name.
I'll ask CS to unmute, and please give us your full name.
Hi, this is Charlie Schlick, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, great. I just want to say, I think, first of all, that for a county meeting, this is all handled very politely. So I think nice job, everybody. I think echoing what a lot of people said, I just want to say that I think the numbers probably need to be reviewed again. And finally, I feel like I've heard two things. I've heard one, that if you have a license and you've been a good host and stuff like that, you're not in danger of losing the license with this restriction. And I feel like a lot of people are afraid of that. And I feel like there's maybe a disconnect in what the intent is and what people's fears are. So I know you guys aren't answering questions now, but if you maybe in a follow-up, you can clarify that for the group. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right. I'll ask Tara Hendrickson to unmute.
Welcome.
Hi, it's Eric Hendrickson, and I'm a long 30-year Park County resident. I own an STR that's directly next door to my primary resident. I've had a STR license since day one, 5 years ago, of the ordinance that currently is in effect. I want to talk just briefly about just a couple of items I haven't heard talked about. In the draft ordinance, I see more requirements in that, and specifically it states that information will be posted on the county website. It's impossible to give public comment on a renewal process without having the county website up to date and showing what those requirements are going to be. The new draft ordinance has multiple new requirements, rules, inspections. Nobody's talked about an annual well testing requirement and how that's going to work with a three-year renewal license for somebody that's been in business for the last 6 or 7 years and has not had complaints or just operates a business with a very, very high rating. So I'm totally confused and disillusioned by the draft ordinance as well as the document that we're talking about with the number of STRs within a community. Community I live in has already restricted it, and they're finding out what that restriction's like because the county's saying five and our community has said two, and it's not enough, and they don't have enough people, places to put their friends during the summer. So it just creates all kind of havoc. At any rate, I would just ask that there be no more regulation in the ordinance until we actually have enforcement of the current ordinance. There is a total lack of enforcement, and that's what's caused the problem within the county. And until that's addressed, there's no need to add more regulations into the system. The STR department is overworked, and they just can't do the required work that to get all the applications and renewals done in a timely fashion.
I apologize, we have run out of time, sir.
All right, I will ask Lynn Felitz to unmute.
Hi, this is Lynn Felitz, live in Colorado Springs. I appreciate you taking the time for comments, things like that. But my situation, we bought 5 acres 2 years ago with the idea of building a second home, and we can only do it with as a short-term rental. And so we're moving through the process, you know, getting the permits and things like that, trying to do it right. But if this the process goes through, we're going to have to really reconsider this. I guess we're early enough that wind impact us heavily, but it's going to impact us if this goes through, that we would stop the process and just try and go somewhere else, because I think there's other people in the same boat that are looking to do something like us, build a second home. The only way we can do it is put a short-term rental on it to help with the bills. And I think this situation, you know, that would affect us and how we would move forward. But Our situation is that we want to be able to move forward, put a second home, use it as a short-term rental, and enjoy it as well. And hopefully that we're able to not make it as onerous as it sounds with this new regulation and be able to go through this process. So thank you for your time and appreciate you listening to us.
Thank you so much.
All right. I will ask Joe Keats to unmute.
Welcome, Joe.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Excellent. My name is Joanna Keats. I am a full-time resident here in Park County. I live in Como. In full disclosure, I am also a full-time county employee, but today I'm speaking to you as a member of this community. I was at every single short-term rental meeting last year. I heard the concerns of the residents. In fact, I was the note taker at all of those meetings. I'm concerned today that all we're hearing from are realtors, property managers, and owners, those who benefit the most from increasing property values and rapid turnover. We heard in those meetings over and over and over again that we need limits. The math may not be perfect, but the formula reflects what the community told us. Balancing the needs and desires of the full-time residents with the property rights held by STR owners is a delicate operation. The people who live here full-time are the most impacted by short-term rentals. As someone else had stated, the median home price here is $585,000 and the income is $35,000. These people are not second homeowners. These people are not able to rent their home out for more than 30 days in a year. They don't have any place else to go. I'm one of those people. I hope to reflect their voices today. Full-time, year-round residents deserve priority, and unfortunately, we haven't heard from any of them today. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Sir, you've been waiting patiently. Please join us.
That's okay. My name is Bill Pike. I've been a Park County resident since 1998. Some of the concerns I have is you stated that Summit County has been doing this since the 90s, and they still haven't figured it out. So why are we trying to model what they're doing when they haven't figured out what they're doing and they've been doing it for 20-plus years? It doesn't make sense to model a county that has no clue what they're doing. And it's obvious that it's impacting their county as well. So I'm, like I said, long-term resident. I don't have a rental at all. My wife and I don't feel the need to have a rental, but why should we limit some other people from having the ability to do that? We do need regulations, yes. We do need proper inspections. We do need proper, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to say the wrong word, but we need the proper people looking at the situations. Septic systems, if you have a four-bedroom house, and a four-bedroom house is good for what, 12 people, 8 people? And then you're packing it with, say, 20 because you're throwing in bunk beds. What happens to that septic system when you have people staying there for a week and it runs into the neighbor's house? That has actually happened in this county. I'm not against short-term rentals. Don't take it that way. But we need to look at other things, other impacts. What's it going to do to my property value if you stop this? My property value is going to tank. That's my retirement. If it goes from a $500,000 house to a $200,000 house, what is that going to do to me? How can I survive? And then also, too, the first order of business was about preserving heritage, right? Who are we preserving our heritage for by limiting visitors? We want a lot of visitors to this county, to the community, for the revenue. If we don't have the visitors, how many businesses are going to continue to hinder their ability? We need more people to work there. We need our businesses to stay open. A lot of the restaurants are struggling. I mean, how many times have you gone past a restaurant and seen no one there in the middle of the day? It's way too often. We need those people here to help revenue to help generate taxes. Raising taxes on people isn't the thing to do.
Your time's up. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right, M. Mitchell, I'll ask you to unmute. M. Mitchell, there you go.
Hi, everyone. This is Maria Mitchell. I am a full-time resident of Park County. I do also work for Park County in the emergency services field. And I'm going to make it short, say ditto to what Jill Keats had just said from the perspective of the little person who does not have a short-term rental and that lives here and manages the challenges of short-term rentals around our homes. I appreciate the first effort that the commissioners are making, and I say first effort knowing you guys have been working on this for quite a while, to update and make the changes. But what I think is really important for you all to hear is, and the comment that Joe had made, is everybody that's on this call is a owner or somehow tied to the short-term rental business. The residents aren't on this call because more than likely they are working. There are negatives as well as positives from having a short-term rental, but making sure that we keep in mind how this is impacting everyone that lives within that subdivision. Me, for an example, I have 4 of the 8 homes around me that are short-term rentals, and that's a very huge impact on my ability to sleep at night in the summertime on a Tuesday night when they're on vacation but we're working. So I appreciate the efforts on this first draft, and thank you.
Thank you, Maria. Appreciate it.
All right. Alex Harrison, I'm going to ask you to unmute.
Welcome.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi. Thanks so much for letting us speak today. For all the work you're doing. I just want to be another voice to say that we're I'm a part-time resident. I own a short-term rental. I'm terrified of public speaking, so bear with me. My wife and I purchased a short-term rental. It is our future plan to live up in Como. In Indian Mountain subdivision, and it is the only way we're able to afford the home that we're hopefully going to live in the future, and just want to be another voice to reconsider the drastic change here, and specifically Indian Mountain subdivision numbers. A lot of people have spoke on the complete change and drop off and allowed STRs in their neighborhoods. Indian Mountain subdivision has over 100 STRs, and the listed number allowed on the Excel spreadsheet that was presented is 6. So we're really worried about that and just want to, be on record and give a comment here. It would destroy my wife and I's plan to, live in Park County in the future and, we're licensed and we'd do everything right. And I also want to reiterate the enforcement, you know, get the bad actors out, thanks for your time and thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right, I'm going to just take one moment of a public comment. Short, the website address, if you want to contact the county under short-term rentals, is short-term.rental@parkcountyco.gov. That's how to get hold of the short-term rental department within development services. All right, JJ, I'm going to ask you to unmute. If you please give us your full name.
Hi, my name is Jared Johnson. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I do not have a short-term rental property, but I do own a second home cabin in Placer Valley. And I just want to voice my concern that this seems like it's taking a bulldozer to a problem when you really just need a hammer. I mean, even your own report from last May said that there are over 1,200, 1,300 short-term rental properties, but only 200 or 300 licensed. So this is clearly an issue of not being able to maintain and permit these. So this, you should not be using this cap. I'm absolutely against the cap. You know, not from my own perspective. I don't plan to short-term rent, but I do think short-term rentals bring a lot of vibrancy and bring a lot of tourism dollars to the community. I mean, even in Alma, we can barely keep a restaurant open, you know, or a coffee shop. And I think even if you reduce these by 125 short-term rentals in Placer Valley, then all those businesses are going to go away. It's not just the property managers. It's not just the realtors. It's all the other small businesses that are going to struggle from this as well. So to go from 150 short-term rentals in Placer Valley to 7 is shocking to me that you guys can even think that's possible. I think you guys need to get out there and enforce the laws that you have on the books, or you're going to have some problems later on with some legal issues. Thank you so much for your time, and thanks for taking a look at this issue.
Thank you for your comments.
All right, Jackie, I'm going to ask you to unmute.
Welcome.
Hello, this is Jackie Middlehook. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I am the current district manager of Indian Mountain and also administer the water augmentation plan. And while administering the water augmentation plan, I see how long people have their house on the market. And some people have had their house on the market for a year and a half, so it's already very difficult to sell properties here in Indian Mountain. I think they're just too high priced. Our property values are going down, and from everything that I read, I think we're at the verge of a national housing value problem. So values are already going down, and people bought these houses, these STRs at high levels, like 600,000. And I'm imagining a lot of people are going to be upside down pretty quickly. And when you take away their income, they're going to be forced to sell. And so there will be more properties to sell, which will lower property values even more. So that's really my main concern. My husband and I live here full time, and it's not very pleasant to look at Zillow and see your house price keep going down. So I'm really wondering if any economic impact studies were done and what the economic impact will be to the whole of Park County and also, of course, to Indian Mountain, because our number, like was previously stated, was 6. And we're a huge neighborhood. I mean, we have over 800 improved properties. We have like 2,500 lots total that people can still build on. But my guess is that if they can't make any income when they're not here for second properties, that they wouldn't take the trouble to build and support the economy. And that's just my 2 cents.
Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it.
All right, Jeffrey Togi, I will ask you to unmute.
Welcome, Jeff.
Hi. The host is not online. Can you unmute me?
Yes.
We can hear you.
Okay, there, Jeff, go on.
Thanks. Sorry about that. I hate being that guy. Anyways, just want to speak up. I agree with Joe and Maria. I've lived here, almost 6 years now. I just see a huge difference in the amount of traffic in our subdivision. I have STRs all around me on the weekends. Like during the summer, we have to keep our windows closed because it's so loud. There are parties going on and we can actually hear full conversations going on. And then up and down the roads, you'll see caravans of SUVs going up the road to their places. And sometimes they even pull up in our driveway thinking that we're their place. The roads are suffering terribly. They did a study last year on our roads saying there was some huge number of traffic in our subdivision, like in the hundreds per day or something like that. It was ridiculous. And people were driving way too fast, so 40 mile per hour average. I know hopefully we come up with a compromise that, works for everybody. I don't want to see everybody going out of business. I don't want to see property values going down, but I didn't move here to be in a commercial slash racetrack, dirt track. I live here to be a residential area and the peace and quiet. So hopefully we can find a good compromise on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, Mark Holthaus, I'll ask you to unmute.
Hi, my name is Mark Holthaus. I live in Kansas City, and we purchased a short-term rental property in the Valley of the Sun here in Park County in 2022, kind of at the height of the market. And let me just start by saying that I appreciate everybody voicing their opinions and for what you guys are doing on the board as commissioners to find a solution to this problem. My love for Colorado started when I was a child and going out there on vacation. And then as I moved into my adulthood and started a family of my own, one of the most beautiful things and memories that I have is coming to Colorado and then being able to buy a second home with the ability to short-term rent it out allowed us to do that. But we need that income to sustain the mortgage that we have on that amongst the additional costs that it takes to run a short-term rental. And I would love to find a solution that works for everyone, because I can definitely understand the frustration for permanent residences where they have to deal with people that are on vacation that may not have the respect for people that are living there, having to get up and go to work the next day, but yet deal with somewhat unethical or unappreciative noise and levels that some tenants can bring. I would love to find the research on the economic impact because we definitely would not be able to sustain that property. And due to the property values depreciating, to sell that property, if this ordinance was to go into effect, would significantly diminish our return. In fact, we would barely break even on what we've put into the property to obtain it in the first place. So I see both sides of it. And I think that going through an enforcement plan to where enforcement on noise complaints, on people driving too fast, on all of the things that additional tourists bring could help solve that problem. And I'm more than happy to pay additional fees to help support somebody that would be an enforcer of the rules and laws that we already have in place. With that, thank you for allowing me to speak and appreciate what y'all are doing.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your comments.
All right. Heather Pruitt, I will ask you to unmute.
Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I'm a long-term resident over on the Bailey side, and I appreciate the people that are having issues with this. We aren't in my neighborhood, so I don't know that we need this broad and this stringent of a regulation on everyone. It feels like everyone's being punished for some bad players that require some enforcement. And I certainly feel for the people with a lot of short-term rentals around them. I think we have some around here, and honestly, I don't know, because we don't have any issues. I don't want the people that own those properties to have any loss of value or income when we are not impacted at all by that in our neighborhood. Would it be more appropriate to go and see, like in those meetings where there were a lot of people complaining, what neighborhoods were those from? Where do we need to target, address some issues instead of trying to take a broad brush to something, and impacting all of our property values in the meantime. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it.
All right. Sarah Salen, I'll ask you to unmute.
Welcome.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi. Thank you. I appreciate the time to speak today. I want to focus on two key concerns. Well, first, I'm a Colorado native. We also have our second home in Park County, actually in Indian Mountain. It's somewhere that we hope to eventually retire. So we have a significant investment in the county. The two key concerns I want to focus on are the inconsistency in the proposed caps and how those are being calculated and the broader economic consequences these caps could create. So first, the math simply does not appear correct or consistent across subdivisions. In the revised ordinance, Indian Mountain is noted as having 864 improved lots, yet the proposed cap is just 6 licenses. That equates to less than 1%. Meanwhile, in Old Kathleen Ranch, there's 47 improved lots, and the proposed license cap is 46, meaning 98% of the properties there could operate as short-term rentals. So how can one subdivision be limited to less than 1% while another is allowed 98%? The math just doesn't work. Then we look at High Chaparral Sulphur Mountain. Proposed cap is 27 licenses, yet there are only 10 improved lots in the entire subdivision. There's not even enough improved properties there to support the number of licenses. So the math is it's just incorrect. It doesn't make sense. These examples suggest the methodology behind the cap is inconsistent and not grounded in any uniform formula. If the caps are going to significantly affect property rights, investments, and livelihoods, they must be based on logical and consistently applied application or calculations. So we would really urge the board to review those calculations. They don't seem accurate. Second, I want to address the economic impact. Negative impacts have been seen in tourism-based communities such as Tahoe and other similar markets when significant short-term rental restrictions are implemented. These experiences underscore a common theme. Tourism-driven rural economies do not just benefit from short-term rentals, but they absolutely depend on them. The additional lodging capacity, visitor spending, and tax revenue these properties generate are integral to the community. In markets where hotels and traditional lodging options are limited, short-term rentals help sustain those local businesses, those restaurants, those outfitters, those gas stations, those retail stores, those event venues, those service providers, all of which rely on visitor dollars circulating locally. In rural areas such as this, where tourism is a major driver of business activity, sharply tightening caps without a clear economic analysis could reduce overnight capacity and shrink the revenue streams that support many, if not all, of the local small businesses. These impacts extend way beyond individual hosts to local residents, home values, restaurants, shops, guides, maintenance crews, realtors, local property managers, housekeeping, cleaning professionals, landscapers, snow removals, operators.
Ma'am, I apologize. We reached the end of the 3 minutes. We apologize.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. And Sarah was the last, so I move we close public comment.
I don't know. I think we'll get the opportunity for somebody in the room.
Oh, if there's I thought they'd be up here.
I want to give you the opportunity.
Oh, okay.
Please come on up. And
I rescind that motion.
We ask you to
motion.
Sign in first and then tell us your name, and you're welcome to come join us, and we'll give you 3 minutes.
Hi, my name's Taylor Sinclair. I'm a resident of Park County. My only home in Valley of the Sun. Very proud to be able to purchase here. I also am a realtor. So my experience is just, I'd urge to please just look at the data. Look at Summit County. You can compare Breckenridge, Frisco, Dillon, Silverthorne, all have their own regulations, and it has affected each part of the county completely differently. Breckenridge is probably taking the biggest hit because I don't know how this proposition has more regulations than Breck does. But I just urge to look at the data. There are so many counties who have already done this and has done nothing but hurt our property values. And to many other people in this room, this is my investment. This is my livelihood. This is the only house I own. I plan to be here for a long time. But Fair Play got its name because we were the land of fair, right? Like, this is the place to be. And that's why I moved here. I don't want an HOA. I don't want a lot of rules. And that's why I enjoy being a resident of Park County. I feel we get a lot of respect from our community, and I love being here. So I know there's a lot of difference in opinion, so just look at the facts, look at our neighbors. It will hurt our town tremendously. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay. Anyone else that would like to address us before we close off public comment?
I guess I just...
He had his chance.
You had one. You'll have another opportunity.
Maria Mitchell wanted to say something. I don't know if Maria had
it. She did.
Maria was on. Yeah, she was on. Yeah. Okay.
I guess I just have one question.
Yes, sir.
It's not really a public comment, but with a lot of the concerns over this, there seems to be a lot of valid points on all sides, but are we not also trying to attain affordable housing in Park County?
I think that's a fair question, but I think that's an appropriate time. I think right now this is public hearing, so we're going to move forward with the public hearing comments, and I believe this is perfectly timed to close public hearing.
Second.
Proper motion and second. Close public hearing. Further discussion, call the question. Those in favor, vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. That motion passes 3-0. Okay, so we're off public comment. This was the first step in a very long journey.
I think we're
to the end of wherever we're going to end up. We don't know where that is. I know where I want to get. And there's been a lot of food for thought today, and I've tried to absorb the different comments and different perspectives, and to take that under consideration. This was recorded, so we have it captured. Won't be a matter of my lousy note taking or not.
I was wearing out of ink. So
I was watching my compadres over here. They use journals. It's kind of a thing that they use, and it helps them. I use my wherever I put it, my day timer. So we have our different methods of capturing things that our feeble minds don't. So with that, is there any business more to come before the board?
Well, I'd like to have just a little bit of discussion.
Please do.
About this. You know, I applaud the activism of all the realtors and short-term rental business owners and such, because they showed up in force, and that's what we want. We want to hear all sides. But I do believe that we need to hear from the residents and the people who also live in neighborhoods that are impacted, because residential zoning, a short-term rental is not a use by right in a residential zone. So a short-term rental is a privilege, not a right. And so we are trying to balance somebody's expectation when they buy their home is to live in a neighborhood where they like have neighbors and there's not strangers coming in and out in a house across the street. And every couple days there's new people there and they don't know what they're doing and they don't know who they are. And so I understand the angst. And so we want to hear from everybody. The other comment I wanted to make right now, just food for thought, is this current ordinance, though I'm sure it's going to be tweaked, it provides teeth for proper enforcement. The main reason we are rewriting this is because the current ordinance has no good mechanisms to take care of the bad behavior, to take care of the guys who are really not doing well. And so that's why we've got to move this forward in the form that's going to give us the ability to enforce the bad actors. And so I just wanted people to know that's going to give us that next step to be able to try to provide a fair ordinance to take everybody's concerns and deal with the bad actors. So thank you.
My comments on this is basically I've been looking at short-term rentals, like I said, since the 90s. Most of that was in my career as assessor, and my first choice was to ignore them. That didn't last very long. We became the redheaded stepchild, however you want to call it, to Breckenridge when these first came in. And Breckenridge, my observation, my opinion, is basically they really didn't know what to do with them at first. It was kind of a phenomenon, kind of a artsy thing, kind of a cool thing people were doing for different ways to travel. And then it came after the aughts got here, Breckenridge went full bore embracing any and all multifamily, large structured density housing units. And they got to the point where their market was severely impacted by that model. Now, that's my observation. That's my opinion. You guys who work in it, you may have a different opinion. That's fine. But when I look at it from an appraiser's perspective, and again, cost-benefit analysis to the community for people who come in on a 3 to 5 day trip versus people that live here 3 to 5 years, There's a difference in that clientele. There's a difference in those people. And I think, as I said, I'm not against short-term rentals and the fact that people have the opportunity through the bundle of rights to utilize that opportunity in exchange for an economic enterprise. That is the common tenet of this country. And property rights are absolutely sacred to me, and I think it's shared by all of us on this board, in the fact that once we take away those rights, they never come back. So we are very cognizant of, and I'm very aware of the perception of what we've been accused of for doing all kinds of reasons. We have lots of reasons, but to me, it's to benefit the health, welfare, and safety of our people and for their pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. And if you got a party house next to you, it's really hard to enjoy and have happiness. We've heard it from the people that live next door. Mm-hmm. Now, that's hopefully the exception and not the rule. But I'm trying to meld the different factors that we've heard in this particular hearing into a process that is cohesive, manageable, workable, and fair. And I don't know what that looks like. I don't.
So, and I'm just going to add a few very short comments. I really appreciate all the different evidence and ideas that came forward today from the public and what they had to say based off of what is here. I will tell you that just for edification, the number one phone calls we get in the county for issues is roads. Number two, every time, is STRs. That's a lot of them. And when we only have 300 to 400 STRs registered, we have a problem. And it makes it very difficult for us to even collect those other 700 currently, or whatever that number may be over and above what we have as far as getting them involved without having some sort of ordinance to be able to do so. And then just so everybody knows, this county at 2,211 square miles spread throughout with STRs everywhere makes it extremely difficult to attempt to go towards any issues when the phone call does come in a timely manner. It is very, very difficult with our current law enforcement and how things are set up, as well as code enforcement. We are working on it. Those are issues. But I just want people to know that that is why it is very difficult to go after those individuals in that side of things particularly. And that's pretty much all I got to say on this comment right now, and I really appreciate the efforts, though. Thank you.
I appreciate that, board and staff. Appreciate all your help through this process. And we're not done. We got a little bit more to go. Any other business to come before the board?
I move we adjourn.
Proper motion.
I'll second that.
Proper second at 3:52 p.m. Call a question. Those in favor of adjournment, vote by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. We are off the record 3-0. Thank you, everybody.
All right, everybody on Zoom, I am going to end the call. Thank you. We're ending it at they're going off, dropping off fast. We were still at 100 members or so people tuned in. So we were at a real good high. So thank you for your participation. Thank you for your comments. Have a great evening. Take care.